So then, at 7:43, Chinese President Xi Jinping has promised $82 billion worth of investment in Africa over the next 3 years as he hosted more than 40 African heads of state in Beijing's Great Hall of the People. Some reports prefer to go with almost 50. Either way, it's a huge number. And really, the only country that wasn't involved in some way was Eswatini, the new name for Swaziland, which remains committed to its alliance with Taiwan. I mean, this is just a phenomenally vast investment opportunity at this point. Dr. Knox Chiteyo first joins us, Associate Fellow in the Africa Programme at Chatham House in London. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. Good evening.
Seeing so many African leaders in one place, not in Africa, in China's Great Hall of the People. I mean, just how significant is that in itself?
It is remarkable. It's hard to think of anything similar. I mean, outside of perhaps the United Nations in the U.S., but certainly it's almost unprecedented. So this is a real major occasion for China and Africa diplomacy and relations. It is something almost unprecedented.
The summit ended with a declaration and an action plan. Can you tell us a bit more about the so-called Beijing Declaration?
Yes, quite a few interesting things. I mean, there's a general declaration with regards to what they call a shared future, shared community between China and Africa. And the aim there, in general terms, is for China and Africa to synergize the development strategies of the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative with the African Union Agenda 2063 and UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. I think the real subtext within that is a commitment to multilateral development philosophy as opposed to what now seems to be the sort of U.S. Unilateral philosophy. But within that, there's a number of really interesting things with regard to infrastructure, connectivity, trade, green development, capacity building, healthcare, people-to-people exchanges, peace and security, and so on and so forth. And perhaps to me what really leapt out is the Chinese have committed to more access to China for African business, including what there's going to be a China-Africa business expo and so on and so forth, because a number of African business people in the past have complained about lack of access to China's business opportunities within China. And they've been saying it's been really coming one way. Now China has pledged that, no, we're going to open up China to African business.
There is this feeling of skepticism of what China's trying to achieve here, maybe even exploiting Africa. Even comparisons might have been made with the colonial rush of the late 19th century, but then again, you hear from the African leaders, and you know they've been satisfied, they've been inspired. Just a couple of the quotes. Is it a little bit condescending to be showing concern on their behalf when they're happy?
Well, I mean, there are certain things about the China-Africa relationship which have raised concern within Africa. I mean, one of them, of course, is Africa's growing debt burden, of which perhaps we can say a little bit more later. But I think one of the key things which people miss in the China-Africa relationship is a very basic thing, and that is the actual tone and language of diplomacy, which is that China speaks or talks with Africa rather than talks to Africa, which is what you often get when sometimes and I've heard African diplomats say, some of the Western organizations, for instance, talk to Africa. So that actually has been important. The language and tone of diplomacy is important. But also, China does make funding available almost immediately, and the implementation of what has been agreed upon happens almost immediately. But of course, yes, there have been issues with regard to debt, and there has been some concern about what some call China's sort of debt diplomacy with regard to to Africa. That in other words, that African nations are getting themselves deeper into debt by taking out these huge loans from China. But you know, Africa's debt is not just to China, but to you know, global financial institutions as well. So it's not just to China.
Rwandan President Paul Kagame, who's also the rotating chair of the African Union, says this is a win-win partnership. You know, no one has to lose. And, you know, to directly quote, "Africa is not a zero-sum game. Our growing ties with China do not come at anyone's expense. Indeed, the gains are enjoyed by everyone who does business on our continent." But again, is there a feeling that the leaders are not necessarily representing the people who might be burdened by debt?
Well, there have been concerns, of course, within Africa, you know, in some countries. To what extent does the leadership actually represent the people? And does the sort of development dividend actually filter down to the people? But in broad terms, I think we would say that Africa's relationship with China, in broad terms, has been beneficial. There have been some issues, which I've mentioned before, but in broad terms, when you look at the kind of infrastructure development, the roads that have been built, the ports and so on and so forth, I think it has, in broadly speaking, been pretty positive. And I think most important, as which I can't reiterate enough, has been the tone of engagement between China and Africa, and also what China's calls their commitment to non-interference and sovereignty of African countries and so on and so forth. And that has been very important for African countries. The extent to which the development deals, does actually filter down to the poorest people in the anti-poverty drive in Africa, I think still remains a little bit under review. But broadly speaking, I would still say the China-Africa relationship has been pretty positive in trade and investment terms.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Dr. Chitoyo.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Knox Chitoyo from Chatham House in London. We can now connect with Professor Christopher Balding, now in Los Angeles, a long-time China analyst and Bloomberg contributor, also previously of HSBC Business School at Peking University. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
What would you agree that the tone of the comments here, the tone of the dialogue is so important?
I think the tone of the dialogue is, but I also think what I think is most important is trying to get the data out of what's going on. And one of the problems that we've had is that a lot of this data is not transparent. The terms of the loan, the terms of these loans and investments are not transparent. And so when China complains about the tone of the debate, in a lot of ways, it only has itself to blame because they simply aren't releasing data on where they're investing money. They are not releasing the terms of the agreement. And so they really only have themselves to blame for the tone of this debate and how people fall in into the pro and anti camps.
Well, we've got 0996 texting in saying, "Say goodbye to all the rhinos and remaining forests there. The Chinese will have no scruples destroying the environment." Maybe we can broaden that out to a general discussion of China's attitude towards investment in Africa. Will they consider what's good for the continent and good for ordinary people, do you think?
Well, I think one of the things that you've seen complaints about in the Belt and Road Initiative, Europe made a very pointed point of this about 18 months ago. The World Bank and the Asian Development Bank have noted that China does not adhere to the standard protocols of doing things like environmental assessment reports before it builds roads, railroads, ports, dams, electrical infrastructure, things like that. And so I think there are very valid questions about, is China considering some of these issues like environmental impact on the projects they're doing? And I think the evidence so far indicates that they aren't.
When we hear the criticisms raised, though, not just what we just mentioned there, but also debt diplomacy being a concern, Those are often raised by analysts in the US and Europe. And you can see how China might turn around, or Chinese analysts might turn around and say, well, naturally they're going to be concerned. And it represents this kind of clash between the old and the new order. What would you suggest?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that China complains about, and you hear this sometimes among even among developed countries outside of Africa, outside of China, is, well, the World Bank is too slow. The Asian Development Bank asks too many questions. Well, the reason that they have to file all this paperwork is to make sure that there is that they are doing their best to limit the scope of possibility for corruption, to make sure that they are having the least environmental impact. And so China is basically saying, we will make this happen in 3 months, where it might take 2 years with the World Bank. But the problem is that if we look at a lot of these projects in Kenya, there are very serious questions about how much Kenya paid for a railway that was built by China, overpaying by magnitude of 3 to 4 for the length of railway, and there's strong suspicion of corruption. And these processes that the World Bank, that other investors do, are there for a very good reason. And so when China says we're not going to follow those processes, it absolutely invites, I think quite reasonably, questions about the intent, the safety of these investments, and how well it's protecting both sides in the agreement.
When we talk about Africa, I mean, it's the continent has a population of over 1.2 billion, more than 50 individual nations, many of which wouldn't ordinarily find it easy to get together in this way with China. How has Beijing been able to do this, to get them all to Beijing and to actually lead cooperation in this way?
Well, the simple answer is money. And if you throw money around, you can normally, whether you're a Silicon Valley billionaire or whether you're Beijing, you can normally get people to attend your parties. And what we see in how Beijing has invested their money is, even though they talk about Africa, there are two things that stick out. Is that, first of all, they're actually concentrating their investment in a pretty small number of those 50 countries that you mentioned. Number one. The second thing is that there are big differences in the amounts that they announce that they're going to send to countries, and the amount of money that that actually materializes on the ground.
So that is a natural concern as well. I'm sorry, we do have to leave it there. Professor Christopher Balding, now based in LA, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you so much for having me.